All right, the Dow gave back 23 points today, a 10%. The NASDAQ up 5 points, a 10%. The S&P 500 down just a fraction of a point. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Tommy Andres, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Good evening. You are listening to KTOO in Juneau. Coming up next is the CBJ meeting. Before we get to that, I'll give you the weather for tonight. It's rain early in the evening, then scattered rain showers, partly fog, lows around 38, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Early in the evening, becoming light and variable. Tuesday, mostly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, scattered rain showers, highs around 42, light winds. And Tuesday night, mostly cloudy, slight chance of light rain, lows around 34, light winds becoming southeast 10 miles per hour late. So stay tuned for the CBJ meeting coming up next.
May 23rd, 2015, regular meeting, 2015-04, to order at 7:01. Please rise for the flag salute.
Good.
Yep.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Ms. Becker?
Here.
Ms. Crane?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Ms. Gladyszewski? Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Ms. Troll?
Here.
Ms. White?
Here.
Mayor Sanford?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We will, special order of business tonight, we have two things to do tonight. One is to give a certificate out to the Hurlock family for the giving that they've done here recently since the estate is now being operated by Mr. Larry Hurlock. And then we will, National Engineers Week proclamation right after that. So if we can get Mr. Hurlock to come up and stand with me and Mr. Library.
So over the past couple of months, I've had the opportunity to meet Larry Hurlock and learn a little bit about the Hurlock family. And it's been a fun thing to learn. I learned that the Hurlocks came to Juneau quite some time ago, and with six sons, Larry's mom and dad started an egg farm out in the Mendenhall Valley and did a ton of real estate development out there and was involved in the movie, the motion picture industry. And they have donated about $20,000 to the library for the purchase of hardbound books. And that bequest was one of five donations. The other four organizations that are receiving funds are the Zach Gordon Youth Center, the Juneau High School Band, St. Paul's Church, and Covenant House in Anchorage. And this is just one of many donations that the Hurlocks have made to our community over the years. And we are very, very grateful for that. So I will pass it on to Larry.
Thank you, and thank you for getting me out of the house to actually come here. I don't like to go to public much. My parents were extremely generous people, but they were also very nice people. No one liked my parents more than the people who they sold property to, seriously. And they had lifelong relations with the people that they dealt with on a business level. And my mother was probably one of the most devout people in Juneau, and she went to church every day. And she, her estate's going to be settled next. And she's bequeathed, well, actually, she gave the property on which the St. Paul's Church was originally built, the first complex. And I'm glad I'm here because, frankly, when they were alive, my parents were almost never given public recognition for what they did. And the donation being given here to the library is probably about 1/70th of what they have given, you know, in present-day value during their lifetimes. Mm. And I'm very, very proud of them for what they did. And a good example is that when my father was subdividing his property, his engineer kept saying, "Roger, you could make a lot more money if you made your lot smaller." And my dad said, "I've got enough money, and I want to live in a nice neighborhood." So, once again, thank you very much.
So, I guess I could tell two stories here, since Larry and I went to school together and grew up here together. It's interesting. What I remember about the Herlock family, of course, is the egg farm. And I think Larry probably got some extra eggs on, like, Halloween and different nights like that. I think that we cooked them and ate them. But but the big thing I can remember about the Herlock family, Mom and Dad, is that, you know, they were always there. When we needed a lot back when we were in high school, the high school building class that was in effect way back then, 66 and 64 and 65, the Herlocks always stood up and gave us, the city and borough, a lot to build on. And so their giving started way long, long time ago. And so I'm very appreciative of that and of them and really true, good Alaskans and Juneauites for sure.
So we have a little certificate here
for the last $20,000 donation that we received for the purchase of library books. And the City and Borough of Juneau's Certificate of Appreciation for the Roger Herlock and the Herlock family are recognized for the generous donation of $19,181 for the purchase of library books in memory of John R. Herlock, dated February 23rd, 2015, Merrill Sanford, Mayor, and Assembly Members.
So, Larry, thank you very much. Appreciate all of the giving.
Thank you.
And, Larry, you got in touch with our reporter up there, and they're going to try to do maybe an in-depth story. That would be interesting to get that. Maybe we could do a proclamation of some sort after we get the full facts. So the second thing on our list is engineers. We've got a few
engineers here in the crowd, too.
Hmm.
Who's here to pick up the certificate? All right, Carl, come on up. How about Mr. Pusich? You want to come up too? Any other engineers out there?
We have all the engineers.
Oh, yeah, come on up.
Well, there should be a
don't
bunch
be scared of us.
Them.
We will not bite you.
Hippy Longstock.
I don't think.
We got your back.
They might bite you.
Do we still have a little 2-minute?
Yes, we do.
Oh, see, Carl.
Carl. Yep.
Who got that, Carl?
Carl did.
So we've got a little 2-minute blurb that we're going to do afterwards. But I'm going to read this proclamation first. And it's from the Office of the Mayor, City and Borough of Juneau, Mayoral Proclamation. Whereas February 22nd to February 28, 2015, has been designated as National Engineers Week. And whereas the 2015 theme, Engineering New Horizons, spotlights the opportunity engineers provide in making the world a better place. And whereas National Engineers Week is celebrated during the week of George Washington's birthday to honor the contributions President Washington, a military engineer and land surveyor, made to engineering. And whereas Southeast Alaska engineers have enhanced the quality of life in Juneau and the Southeast community through public work projects, ports and harbors development, maritime transportation, mining, and improvements to airports, museums, recreational facilities, roadways, schools, and telecommunications. And whereas the Juneau branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers and Alaska Capital Engineers are local sponsors of National Engineers Week, celebrating the local accomplishment of Projects of the Year and Engineer of the Year recognitions within the Juneau region. And whereas since 19... You can tell an engineer wrote this. 3 pages later... I'm sorry. Whereas the 2015 Juneau Math Counts competition was held on February 14th at Juneau Douglas High School. And whereas the Juneau branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers is engaging in hands-on school outreach programs in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics during Engineers Week to inspire future generations of engineers and scientists. Whereas the Juneau branch has established civil engineer and professional engineer scholarships for high school seniors pursuing Bachelor of Science degrees in the engineering and science field. Now, therefore, I, Merrill Sanford, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby proclaim February 22, 2015 to February 28, 2015 as National Engineers Week.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
I'd get up, but I have a broken foot.
Thank you. I guess I should. Oh, I was thinking, I can't hear from her. That'll be
designed. Now
it needs me to listen to you.
I have a broken foot.
I would.
Thank you, sir. If I could just have a couple seconds to thank Mr. Mayor and the Assembly for the proclamation. And again, we're very fortunate to live in Juneau and where we have very qualified and competent engineers. As consultants, as construction inspectors, as we've got a strong cadre of retired engineers. Some of them that showed up today as well. But we do a couple things during E-Week, and that's recognizing the accomplishments of the engineers in the local area. We also do a lot of, as the proclamation mentioned, outreach. And on Valentine's Day, some of the engineers were involved in Math Counts. And Math Counts is an annual event that Doug Murray has really sponsored over the last 15 years or so. And that's something else that, besides the scholarship opportunities, just the volunteerism that engineers in town do. And I wanted to share with, this is only going to run about a minute and a half, but it just... For people that aren't familiar with Math Counts, it's very impressive. Our kids in Juneau are very, very talented, and it's basically a spelling bee for math. And I found a YouTube that kind of shows what it's like at the national level. But the kids locally, Mr. Steele told me that his daughter competed at this level as well. So that's, if we could just kind of give an idea, we call them mathletes, and so. Rob, go ahead and just run that.
So I think we're good. If you guys are ready, we move on to the first question of our matchup. And the question is, the graph of 16x minus 2y equals 48 max, negative 24. Negative 24 is the correct answer.
So that's
really good. Next, that's 1-0 lead. Over Bobby, as we move into the second question of the matchup, and the question is, a rhombus has sides of length 10 inches. Bobby.
96
is the correct answer.
You're one more. But you get the gist, and the Floyd Dryden kid that won this.
1-1, moving on
is really sharp. He's going for the third year at the state.
And the question is, when dribbling a basketball up the court, Max. 34 is the correct answer.
Anyway, thanks again for the proclamation.
I was almost done reading.
I couldn't even read the question.
Yeah, really.
It's most of the way through it.
Wow, that's great.
You know, sometimes we sit in this room and hear a lot of negative things and a lot of bad things, but tonight already we've heard two great things from seniors, the giving that our community does to us, and then now when we look at this and look at our kids, some of our kids and some of our young people who are coming up, it's pretty neat to see that they're involved in our community, and what the next generation is going to be like is pretty neat for sure. So we will move on to approval of minutes. We have before us the February 2nd, 2015, regular meeting 2015-02. Is there any corrections? Seeing and hearing none, they're so ordered. Manager's request for agenda changes?
None, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Public participation on non-agenda items? I didn't have anybody signed up in the back, but I will give the public an opportunity if you wish to speak to us. Anybody from the public on a non-agenda item? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Is there anybody from the public who requests for consent agenda changes other than ordinances for introduction? Seeing none, assembly requests for consent agenda changes?
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Not a request for change, but on resolution 2716, which is on a consent agenda, that was before the HRC committee this evening, and we recommended that the assembly approve it.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. So the HR committee recommended that we approve that one. Is there any changes to the consent agenda from the assembly members? Seeing none, so ordered. Assembly action, now we go. Go ahead, Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the adoption of the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? So ordered. I'm going to move through this agenda very quickly.
Is this okay. Karen told you to hurry?
Yeah, Karen told me to hurry. Yep. Public hearing. So we have before us ordinance 2015-07B. Madam Clerk, will you please read the title?
An ordinance amending the land use code relating to accessory apartments.
Administrative report, please, Madam Manager.
This ordinance would allow for larger accessory apartments up to 1,000 square feet if certain conditions are met with respect to the net floor area of the primary dwelling and the size of the lot. The ordinance also simplifies the review and approval process for accessory apartments that are proposed on lots that exceed the minimum lot size. Additionally, the ordinance provides that the Planning Commission may approve an accessory apartment application on a lot that is less than the minimum lot size. Finally, the ordinance would also clarify the parking requirements and make a few additional housekeeping changes. The Planning Commission reviewed Ordinance 2015-07 in its October 28, 2014 meeting and recommended forwarding to the full Assembly for approval. The Assembly Committee of the Whole reviewed the ordinance at its February 9, 2015 meeting and recommended amending the ordinance to allow the Community Development Director to approve accessory apartments that have adequate wastewater disposal capacity, regardless of whether the capacity is provided by public sewer or on-site septic. Ordinance 2015-07B reflects those changes. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. And I see in our red folder we had a page and some changes in red in our folder. Does everybody have those? Does anybody need an explanation of those changes for those two? Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For purposes of discussion, I would move adoption of Ordinance 2015-07B.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis.
Public testimony. And
wait, just excuse me. All right.
We'll get back to it. You're okay. So we've opened it up, but I would like to take public comment If there's anybody in the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance, please step forward. Seeing none, public comment is closed. And before us is 2015-07B, and it's already been moved. Any comments from the assembly? And as changed in... Why no?
Those, at the Committee of the Whole, there was some discussion about parking. Those are a couple different ways that you could make changes to parking if you want to, but they're not included in the ordinance in front of you tonight.
Okay. So everybody got that? If anyone on the assembly wishes to move forward with these parking changes, these are a couple of options. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That was what I was looking for purposes of discussion. We have some staff in the back of the room. I was wondering if perhaps one of them could answer the question under alternative B for the single space. It lines out two parking spaces, and I'm not sure what that means by lining that out, whether it totally eliminates that. So it says accessory apartments only are required to have one. And if they wanted more than that, or if they needed more than that, I'm assuming that staff would make that recommendation and to them, and it would have to come before the Planning Commission for a variance or something.
Staff's coming up.
Could you, which?
I was looking at the one on the bottom of the page, alternative B. Glancing at them, it looks like the only difference is that the parking space, the middle block on that under accessory apartments has been modified for the second version.
So the only parking requirement in alternative B, the only requirement for parking is one space for an accessory apartment. That's the minimum. If someone wants to provide more, they can provide more. If they can't provide one, then they can apply for a variance to the parking requirement.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, if I can follow up on that. Then if they had an accessory apartment that needed more than two per alternative A, the same thing would apply. They would have to make application, correct?
Alternative
wouldn't matter.
An alternative A, which is... requires one parking space for an accessory apartment that's an efficiency or one bedroom. And if it's two bedrooms, it requires two parking spaces. So if you have a two-bedroom accessory apartment and you provide three parking spaces, that's great. If you can only provide one or zero, then you could go through a variance process
okay.
and request less.
Not required, though, to get a variance. If you want to do more,
you can do more. If you want to do less, you have to ask permission.
Okay, all right. That's just what I wanted to check. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Mr. Jesse Keel first, and then Mr. Old.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess I would move to amend the ordinance by Section 6 using Alternative A there so that one efficiency in one-bedroom accessory apartments require at least one parking space. Two-bedroom accessory apartments require a minimum of two parking spaces.
Mrs. Becker?
Well, I would like to ask staff a question.
Go ahead.
Okay. So in that one that he just recommended, the two-bedroom, if the second bedroom is used for children or something, it couldn't be that you had to have two no matter what, or does that say, even if it's the same family, children have one bedroom, parents have the other?
We only have the opportunity to require it when the plans come in and we're looking that there are two bedrooms. How those bedrooms are used, we don't manage. So if you're building a two-bedroom accessory apartment, then it requires two parking spaces. And you could have perhaps eight people living in there. We don't regulate that. Or they still would have to provide two parking spaces.
Ms. Troll?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just curious to know if staff had a recommendation.
Well, the recommendation that we had was in the original ordinance with one parking space for the smaller accessory apartment and two for larger. The two alternatives that were proposed to you are similar to other ways that we manage parking spaces for residential units. So I think they all get us essentially the same place in a different way. So I think they're all fairly comparable.
Okay, Mr. Keel.
Just to speak to it briefly, I like this alternative A that I've moved because it's based on the number of bedrooms. At one point, I know my wife and I, when we were new to Juneau, rented a 625-square-foot apartment. And it had one bedroom. We had one car. It made a fair amount of sense. The number of bedrooms is at least marginally related to the use. The number of square feet doesn't really serve as a very good proxy for anything, in my opinion. So you're never going to hit it perfectly when you're just looking at the structure, as Ms. Becker pointed out, instead of who's living in it. But I think this is a reasonably good proxy for how people might use an accessory.
Any other comments from the Assembly?
I do have one, yes, please. I would actually prefer alternative A. A lot of young people these days are embracing a lifestyle that does not involve ownership of a vehicle. They use public transportation. They walk. They bike. I think one parking spot is more than adequate. I've personally lived in a four-bedroom home and was a one-car family. So given where the demographics are going, I don't think we need that much parking.
So you're in favor of the amendment, which is a amendment?
I would be in favor of alternative B.
Okay, thank you.
Which is only requires one parking spot for the unit, regardless of the number of bedrooms.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Mr. Roll.
Yeah, I'm going to support alternative A from the standpoint of these accessory apartments are an addition that we're making into the neighborhood and the communities. We're making them kind of, you know, larger than originally anticipated. So to minimize the impact on the neighborhood, it seems we're going to get a lot further with the compatibility of having accessory apartments, given the design that have forwarded so far. So I think it minimizes disruption to the neighborhood in that regard.
Thank you. Any other comments on Amendment 1? Did I have any objections to that? Ms. Becker, do you want to speak to your objection other than what you already have?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
I think 1's good. 1's enough.
Okay, let's move forward on Amendment number 1. Take the roll, please.
And this is to support Alternative A?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
No.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
No.
4A, 4-nay, motion fails.
Okay, so we have the original. Does anyone else propose an amendment other than what we have?
I would like propose that we do this ordinance with alternative B for parking for one space for any apartment.
Okay, amendment number 2 is proposed to do alternative B for 2015-7B. Go ahead. Okay. Anybody wish to speak to that? Mr. Keel.
Only to say, Mr. Mayor, that I, having not gotten my preferred amendment, I think this alternative is also somewhat preferable to the original, so I'll support the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Roll call, please. Anybody else? Roll call, please.
What's your name, Jeff?
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Motion carries. Oh, sorry. Mayor Sanford.
Yes.
Mayor, motion carries.
Okay, so amendment number two has passed, and now we have before us ordinance 2015-7B as amended. Are there any objections to that moving forward? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay.
We just read the main motion.
So 2005-7B has passed the assembly, and we'll move on to our second public notice. Madam Clerk, could you please read 2015-08B?
An ordinance amending the official zoning map of the city and borough to change the zoning of two parcels between 4605 and 4765 North Douglas Highway from RR transition to D3 to D15.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, administrative report, please.
I will note that there is a new map that assembly members should have and members of the public. It's on the back table. That's slightly different than what is in your packet. So December 2013, the Community Development Department initiated a rezone of the 43 parcels along North Douglas Highway extending from mile 1.3 to mile 1.9. The parcels are currently identified as transition zones, rural reserve transition to D3, rural reserve transition to D15, and D1 transition to D3. On June 25, 2014, CDD staff held an informational meeting to discuss the proposed rezoning with all property owners in the affected area. No one from the public participated in the meeting. The Planning Commission heard the rezone proposal at its August 26, 2014 meeting, regular meeting. The Planning Commission recommended approving the rezone with modifications, upzoning a portion of the lots currently zoned D1 transition D3 to D5. And a portion of the lots rezoned rural reserve transition D3 to D15. The Planning Commission believed that modifications were needed for consistency with the land use maps of the comprehensive plan. Ordinance 2014-45 was forwarded to the Assembly with the Planning Commission's recommendation. Based on public testimony at the October 20, 2014 Assembly meeting, the Assembly remanded proposed ordinance 2014-45 to the Planning Commission to solicit further public feedback and explore opportunities for higher densities. The rezone was re-noticed for the November 25, 2014 Planning Commission hearing. Based on public testimony at the hearing, the Planning Commission reversed its earlier decision to recommend upzoning of any of the parcels except the two that are the subject of this ordinance. Per CBJ 4970-700 through 720. Once the Assembly has created a transition zone, the rezone occurs upon the Planning Commission granting the rezone to the transitional zone designation. Accordingly, as the Planning Commission reversed its October 2014 decision to recommend upzoning 41 of the 43 parcels under consideration, as to those 41 parcels, the rezone is complete. Ordinance before you tonight, 2015-08B, removes the 41 parcels that were rezoned at the November 24, 2014 Planning Commission meeting, which leaves two parcels for the Assembly to consider upzoning from D3 to D15. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to make public comment on this rezone? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and move to assembly action. Assembly action. Mr. Keel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will move adoption of serial number 2015-08B. For purposes of discussion, and propose, if I may, an Amendment 1.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Let's move forward to the amendment then, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we replace Section 2 of the proposed ordinance with the text of Section 2 of the Ordinance 2014-45 that was before us in October, as recommended by the Planning Commission at that time, with, I think, a conforming title change if needed. And let me, if I may, speak to what that difference is. That difference puts us back in a position. There's really no substantive difference with regard to the D15 upzones. The Planning Commission didn't change its recommendation between the initial proposal and what we have before us. But it puts us in the position of looking at what the Planning Commission's recommendation that was before us in early October was, to take the D1 transition to D3 parcels and to upzone them to D5 zoning, 5 units an acre. And it is my understanding, having checked with the city attorney, Mr. Mayor, just that all the assembly members know, that if we adopt this amendment, we're probably going to have to renotice this ordinance so as to provide adequate notice to the public of a much broader scope than what was on our agenda tonight. However, I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's actually an important step for this assembly as we look to the future of our community. I won't belabor the point of our housing crunch. I think we've all talked about that a great deal. I am reminded, though, of a meeting the Committee of the Whole had with a group of builders a couple years back, where one of them said one of the greatest wastes, in his opinion, in Juneau history was to take a whole lot of flat land, well-drained land in the valley, and zone it D3. And the simple fact is that the city and borough of Juneau and the state of Alaska together have put millions of dollars into extending sewer service out through and beyond the neighborhood in question here. And there were two major reasons for doing that. One was about the water going into the channel, because septic systems sometimes fail, but the other was to allow for higher density zoning and to allow for more housing in this region. And I think that's very important. If I remember the staff report to the Planning Commission correctly, 2 units an acre means about, at maximum, build out something in the neighborhood of 160 potential units. So instead of D1 to D3 at 160 potential units, D1 to D5 would be something like 320 potential units. And having read through the fairly extensive staff report and Planning Commission discussions, I think it's pretty clear that it will be a very, very long time before there are 320 more units built on these pieces of property. There are owners of this property who don't want to subdivide and they don't want to add, and that is their right as owners. There will be difficulty in getting driveway permits from DOT onto North Douglas Highway. And all those things together with some other complications mean that any change coming to this neighborhood will come slowly. But it can't come if we go with a more restrictive zoning. And so we cap the max. If we go with D3, we cap the maximum additional number of units for millions of dollars of sewer infrastructure at about 160, all of which we won't realize. So I think that that this is an important change, and I think it's really the change that's been envisioned for a long time. I know I'm running long, and I won't run much longer, but I want to read from the descriptions of our residential districts in Title 49, in our code. In the description of the D3 residential district, it says, the second sentence, D3 zoned lands are primarily located outside the urban service boundary, where public utilities are not provided. And then to paraphrase, it suggests that it's a good place to start until public sewer and water are provided. In D5, in the same code, second sentence of that one, D5 zoned lands are located in the urban service boundary. And I would just point out, in closing, The urban service boundary extends to the north end of Bonnie Bray subdivision, well beyond what we're looking at tonight. So, Mr. Mayor, I have great appreciation for all the work that, staff and the Planning Commission has done on a, policy basis. I just think we need to go with the higher density zoning to enable, when property owners are ready and when they want, to enable a few more housing units in this region.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. So, Madam Law Department, could you, if we approve this amendment, amendment number one, what's our next step?
Because the ordinance would be changing, the ordinance would need to be reintroduced for a new public hearing.
And it would come back to one of our meetings?
It would come back to the Assembly. It would be an ordinance process.
Okay. Okay. Everybody understand that? Just so everybody.
Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Crane, do you understand that?
Yes. Could I make a comment?
Yes, you can.
I supported the original ordinance when it came before us with the higher zoning limits. So I support Mr. Keel's amendment. I am the one that asked it to go back to the plant, to be remanded back to the Planning Commission. My concern at the time was the lack of public testimony. But that concern has been addressed. I agree with Mr. Keel. I think we need to go with a higher zoning number, and I support his amendment.
All right. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak to amendment number one? Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I sat through the Planning Commission meeting in which they reheard this, and one of the reasons that it was remanded back was the lack of public notice and nobody testified. At that hearing, there were a significant number of people that were affected by this zoning that testified before the Planning Commission. And all of them wanted to remain D1 to D3. None wanted to go to D5. In Mr. Keel's initial part of his discussion, he made the exact same case that they'd made as property owners. They bought it as D3. They have no intention of increasing the zoning. They have no intention of increasing the density. They don't want to have any issues with DOT and more driveways. Having owned some property out there at one point in time, that's not exactly the best flat land for a lot of various driveways. I have listened to the Planning Commission discussion on one subdivision out there in which sort of a serpentine road up the hill to get some homes in there, and some of the issues and concerns about that in terms of driveway access. I think Mr. Keel made a great case for keeping it at D3 in my mind, because I believe that was what the homeowners testified in, and that's why the Planning Commission reversed their decision. So I'm going to oppose the amendment. I assume it's probably going to pass, and we'll definitely probably hear from all of those landowners when it comes back to us. But I'm going to oppose it because I think we sent it back for public hearing. The public came out, and they objected to going to D5, and that's the way the Planning Commission ruled. And I just don't know that it's incumbent on us to change it. So I'm going to be opposed to the amendment.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jones. Any other? Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was also at that Planning Commission meeting, and I disagree with us sending it back to the Planning Commission in the first place. And now it's like what I'd call a ricochet rabbit. We sent it back because some of us didn't think there was enough public testimony received on or public notice. So people came in and said, we don't want that. And so the Planning Commission responded, and it comes before us again, and here we are saying, well, we should have had what we had in the first place. Not that I disagree with that, because I do. We should have dealt with it the first time as presented. I just have a little different position on it than Mr. Jones. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Ms. Troll?
Yeah, I'm going to oppose this amendment primarily out of respect of the sort of due process that we set up, because we did send it back to the Planning Commission, so it was properly noticed, and the landowners could come before them, and the Planning Commission did their job. They listened to what the landowners' concerns were and chose to keep it at D3. So unless there's some compelling evidence that the Planning Commission didn't do their job in reconsidering this with due public notice and a lot of public input, I think we need to stay the course with the Planning Commission.
Ms. White.
I would actually support the amendment. I don't feel that the upzoning would force anybody to subdivide their land. It's not going to force anybody off of their property. It's going to give them the option, if the topography of their particular piece of property will lend itself to a little bit of higher density. As to the driveway issue, that's a DOT matter to discuss, but I know that I've lived in one of those neighborhoods that got the benefit of water and sewer and then protested any zoning changes, and so that's part of what's put this community into the pickle of affordable housing that we are in today, as we've built out the infrastructure and then we've caved to the pressure of people who don't want any change. And there's always going to be a faction of people that no matter what it is, they don't want anything to change. Like I said, this is not forcing them to subdivide their property. It's only giving the option. It's still going to have to get reviewed. It's going to have to be economically feasible. Their site prep is going to have to pencil out before they can do it. So I would definitely support this amendment.
Thank you, Ms. White. Any other? Ms. Becker?
I'll just add my voice that I support the amendment, too, for the same reasons expressed by Ms. White and Mr. Keel.
Thank you. Is there any objections to this amendment?
I object.
Mr. Jones objects. Please read the roll, please.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Churl?
No.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mayor Sanford?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. And so do we have to do anything, or it will just go forward to be reheard?
I will draft the amendment, and it will be back on the consent agenda as a new version, and then before you for public hearing.
Okay. Thank you. Everybody understand that? Okay. We'll move on.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
If I understand right, it comes back to us as an ordinance for introduction because it will be changed. Mm-hmm. So it's two assembly meetings from now before it'll be back for public hearing. Mm.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So we move on to C, item C. Madam Clerk, please read ordinance 2015-09 title.
An ordinance amending the penal and traffic codes relating to marijuana offenses and establishing penalties.
Madam Manager.
As of February 24, 2015, the effective date of the initiative, state law will prohibit the consumption of marijuana in public. The initiative, section 1738040, states it is unlawful to consume marijuana in public. A person who violates this section is guilty of a violation punishable by a fine of up to $100. The initiative does not define in public, and as such is potentially subject to legal challenge. Additionally, because the state has not adopted a bail schedule or set fine to be imposed, all citations will require mandatory court appearances. This ordinance would prohibit the same activity banned under state law, public consumption, but unlike the initiative, would define what in public means, giving clear guidance to the public about what is and isn't allowed, and by establishing a specific fine amount for violations, and would allow persons violating the law the option to pay the fine in lieu of a court appearance for the first and second violations. The ordinance would establish $100 penalty for the first and second violations, and for the third and subsequent violations requiring a mandatory court appearance. This ordinance would also amend the traffic code by adding a provision prohibiting the consumption of marijuana while driving a motor vehicle and prohibiting the person in control of a motor vehicle from permitting or allowing anyone in the vehicle to consume marijuana while the vehicle is being driven. The ordinance would establish a penalty of $200 for the first violation, $300 for the second violation, and a mandatory court appearance for the third and subsequent violations, consistent with the city's open container law. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on ordinance serial number 2015-09? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We'll move forward to assembly action. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move ordinance 2015-09, adoption of it, and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection, Mr. Nankervis?
Mr. Mayor, I don't have objection necessarily, but I do have some questions. Before I could support the motion, I have some questions for law.
Go ahead, Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think we all got that email from John Sievertson, who I was fortunate enough to work for a long time. He's a very nice man. But he brings up some good points, and my questions pertain to the second and third paragraphs under this ordinance, at least in the summary here, where it talks about establishing third and subsequent violations, both for smoking in public and for in the vehicle, for mandatory court appearances. Is there a bigger fine for these mandatory court appearances? Because I'm not sure what they are, and if they are bigger fines, is that why they're going to court? And if they're not bigger fines, why make it mandatory court? Because there's a cost associated with sending our attorneys to court if you could maintain it as just a fine versus mandatory court. And then I kind of rambled a little bit there, but I think you know where I'm going with that. It is very difficult, as Mr. Sievertson pointed out, to figure out convictions. You can figure out how many times somebody's been cited, but how many times they've been convicted of that offense is much more difficult unless something's changed recently. But that's the hard part of it. Could you help me here?
So the policy decision to have a graduated fine came from this body. That's where it initiated. The mandatory court appearance, one, it does not require an attorney to handle that. These are still minor offenses. What that requires, though, is that the person be arraigned in court, and it leaves the fine discretionary with the judge. So the purpose of establishing a fine schedule is so that the person being cited has the option of foregoing an arraignment by the court and simply paying the fine, because we've established a fine for whatever the offense might be. The mandatory court appearance requires appearance in court for arraignment, and if the person is found guilty or pleads out in front of the court can impose a fine up to $500, which is the top limit for an infraction. So that's how the scheme works. Did that answer your question? It's looking like it did not answer your question.
Sort of. Mr. Mayor, it sort of answered my question. I guess I still don't understand why there's a necessity to make it mandatory court if it's still going to be under $500 and it's still considered basically an infraction then, correct?
So the policy reason behind it is to make it a more burdensome process for the person being cited. No one likes to go to court and appear in front of a judge. That's the reason why you apply a graduated schedule. So if they continue to violate the same law over and over and over again, eventually you want them to have to go face the judge rather than just write a check. That's the reason behind this type of a scheme.
Thank you.
So, Madam Law Department, is it hard for the police officer to tell where the mayor has got caught three times and been convicted or whatever? I mean, doesn't he got all that on his laptop now or his
facts unit?
Or the facts, yeah.
So if it's an officer who is citing someone from a patrol vehicle, they do have tracks units in their patrol vehicles. They have access to court view. If it's an officer on foot, they do not have instantaneous access to court view without calling dispatch. So it is a process for the officer who's patrolling on foot who wants to write a ticket to call dispatch and find out if someone has been convicted. Dispatch has to look it up in court view.
But it's doable.
It is doable.
Ms. White?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. If we were to not have the graduated penalty for the consumption in public and keep it on the within a motor vehicle, would we have the ability to add that at a later date? If it became a problem, we could add the graduated fines. My concern is just tying up court time when I hear of child custody cases, abuse cases, things like that, that are just getting left out for months because the courts are clogged. And if that's not really going to, it doesn't sound like having a graduated fine is going to do much, and I don't see that it's going to be that big of a problem if we drop that. Although, like I said, I would still support it when someone's operating a vehicle because, you know, a vehicle weighs thousands of pounds, and if it's coming at me, although they say that somebody who is drunk will run the red light or run the stop sign, somebody who is stoned is going to wait for it to turn green. But, you know, that being said, I'm more concerned about what somebody's doing when they're operating a motor vehicle than what they're doing when they're up in Cope Park.
You can make it a static schedule or remove the MCA requirement and impose it at a later date. That's your option.
So we would have that ability to change it at a later date.
To modify the fine schedule, yes, at any time.
Mr. Mayor?
Ms. Green, go ahead.
I'd like to ask the attorney if the police have a preference here.
I do know that the police have a preference, and Chief Johnson is here and can tell you what that preference is.
Chief Johnson?
I would appreciate that.
So the way they do it with alcohol, which is what we're looking at kind of copying here, is they usually just write the citation for the open container. And in order to go back and find out if they've already got the convictions, it does take a little while to do that, and that usually does not happen. So we write a lot of people a citation who have multiple convictions who would have qualified for the graduated fine, but we didn't know it in the field, and I think that's what Mr. Nankuris was referring to. So as a general practice, unless the officers have personally dealt with them and have some personal knowledge, it's not picking up that graduated system. They're writing the tickets. They are able to if they spend the time to research it, but there's a tremendous number of them. They don't do it on every one because of just the time it takes in order to do that.
Mr. Keel, and then Mr. Kervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So either for the chief or for the city attorney, it sounds to me like this approach with the option of a court appearance gives law enforcement the maximum number of tools. If you have the option of writing the flat amount ticket, or if you know this is somebody you've cited repeatedly and it's time for them to see the magistrate and answer in front of the bench, you have that option too. Am I misunderstanding something about this? Or do you have to write the court appearance ticket on the fifth time or the eighth time?
It's not that it's an option. It's that if an officer hasn't checked and has written a ticket for a certain fine amount, we could not then go back and say, no, we should have given you an MCA ticket because you had two previous ones. We're kind of stuck with the bargain, if you so to speak, that the officer wrote in the first ticket. And because they're on most of the open container tickets are written by the patrol officers who are patrolling on foot, that's the situation that Chief Johnson is explaining. They don't have units in their they don't have vehicles, so they don't have tracks units, so they have no way of checking court view easily, and that's what ends up happening.
So it sounds like I won't call it an option. It sounds like the maximum number of tools from the structure we have in this ordinance before us.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just one point of clarification. You said they're writing the tickets. Are they writing them as if it's first offense because they don't know otherwise?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Comments? Any amendments to this ordinance? Who moved it? Ms. Becker moved ordinance 2015-09 and asked for unanimous consent, I think. Mm-hmm. Is there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Madam Clerk, ordinance 2015-10.
ordinance adopting the Juneau Economic Development Plan.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Administrative report.
This ordinance would adopt the Juneau Economic Development Plan dated January 28, 2015, and amend the CBJ's comprehensive plan to include the Juneau Economic Development Plan. Work on the Juneau Economic Development Plan began in January 2014. In developing the plan, the consultants conducted public workshops and met with community leaders. The Assembly Committee of the Whole heard the presentation on the plan from the consultants in April, June, July, August, September, and October of last year. On January 5, 2015, the Committee of the Whole reviewed the final draft plan. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to speak to the Economic Development Plan ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We'll move to Assembly action. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move the Assembly approve Ordinance 2015-10 and would ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Ms. Troll?
Mr. Mayor, I don't have any objections, but if I may ask a question or two on the topic.
Go ahead.
Madam Manager, at a previous meeting, I kind of requested that when this plan came to us, we had maybe some proposals on how it might be implemented and going forward, whether, you know, from the staff part, or I know the Chamber of Commerce has looked at their role, the Juneau Economic Development Council has looked at their role, just kind of wondering how you see this moving forward.
As soon as we vote on it, we'll have that discussion, okay, Ms. Troll?
Okay, that's fine.
It's the next on the list to do here. Any other questions about the ordinance? Is there any objections to it moving forward? Seeing none, so ordered. So just to go where Ms. Troll was going here, there was a couple of things that have been recommended to do and a couple of things that staff and myself are doing right now. And I've called a couple of different organizations, the Chamber, the JEDC, Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau, a couple of those other groups, the Airport Board, a couple of those other groups that have been identified and not identified in the Economic Development Plan to come in and discuss and review Chapter 5 with some of us, as many as who want to sit in on that during an afternoon or afternoon meetings in at noontime itself, and discuss with, like, Brian and with Craig at the chamber what they can do for us to help us move the economic development plan forward, because it's such a big document with so many objectives and so many goals that if we try as the city staff and as the assembly to take it all on ourselves, it will truly be a 10-year plan before we get to the end of it, for sure. So if we could get help from our different organizations who are in economic development within the community, I would think that we can move forward with a lot of this plan in a more rapid, faster mode than not. And so that's the goal, to do that. And there's also one other suggestion that was made from Ms. Troll, in fact, and that is to have you assembly members look at some of the objectives, and some of the objectives and goals you either have been working on or would like to work on and maybe be a champion of. And if that's the case, if you'll get that information to me, then we can start laying out where you go to, you know, if we then assign this to CDD or to JCVB or wherever it goes, we'll hook you up to meet with those people and make some type of an action plan of yourself of whatever you're working on. So I think Ms. Troll had a great idea to do that. I need your guys' input now to individually to look through the plan, especially Chapter 5, and see what you want to take on as a champion or not, for sure. So those are the two things that to move forward. And Ms. Kiefer and Rob are both looking at the plan especially Chapter 5, to see what we're already working on. Mm-hmm. There's probably 10 or 15 of those action items that we're already doing. For instance, the housing action item. That's already being worked on and will be completed in the next 8 or 9 months. The North Douglas Road is already moving forward through engineering and CDD and admin staff. So that is something that doesn't maybe necessarily have to go to an individual group to do because we are already tackling it. So that's where we stand, and that's the goal to try to move forward. If any of you have any other ideas for the economic development plan, please talk to me or say something now, and we will try to facilitate your thoughts and wishes too. So, Ms. Troll?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So just if I can track right, so there's going to be a special meeting to discuss Chapter 5?
Maybe a couple of them.
Maybe, okay. With the rest of the connected community groups.
Yeah.
Okay. And just to elaborate a little bit on the idea that I was proposing, it was, if you look at the plan, there are 9 initiatives, and there are 9 of us. And to make sure that nothing important really falls off the table and that, you know, there's some energy behind all of this, I thought is there's, if we can work it out to there's one assembly person is responsible for each initiative, and then your other responsibilities kind of line up. For an example would be if I continue to, you know, if I look at enhancing Juneau as a federal research center, as a, you know, state of the position as a major research center, then that then I continue on doing the NOAA work and that type of thing, so that the extra committee work that we do kind of lines up to help make sure that we're tracking with the initiatives, and I expect that when we have this meeting with the other groups, then we would also learn who else in the community and who else with the staff would be associated with that particular initiative. So.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on the economic development plan? And I would just like to say this is a big plan. It's just like when we adopted the comprehensive plan. It's a big plan. There's lots of good things in it. There's a few things in it that I don't like, which I would assume that all of you have some things that doesn't interest you at all, but most of it I think probably does. And I think the goal here is to make sure that we don't get off and running on something that we can't finish. And so make sure that as you look at the plan and if you're working on something, you bring it back through the assembly to look at. Because there's a couple of places in here where they say they want to hire, where they recommend hiring somebody to do some of the different things. Well, that might not be feasible or cost effective to do in this year or next year, maybe in a year or two out. So make sure that you don't run off on your own trying to get some things that are going to cost money done without coming back through the assembly and the finance committee to get, I don't want to say permission, but to get authorization to do, okay? Anything else on economic development, Brian? I'd just like to say thank you to you members of the assembly who were here when we first put this on our work plan a couple of years ago now and ponied up and got staff to find the $100,000 to do this. It wasn't easy to do. It's a lot of money. But I think in the end, when you look at the plan and see most of the ideas that are in there will be a benefit if we can get them accomplished. So I think it's great. And we'll march down that road together. Okay. If there's nothing else on the economic. Yes.
There was a page in your red folder about the economic development plan. Was the motion made by Mr. Jones? Did that include the corrections that were outlined in that?
Your RADA sheet.
Yeah, thank you.
Did everybody see that?
Yes. Totally forgot about it.
I didn't make that specific, but I would assume so, yes. Like it.
So is there any objections to adopting the errata sheet to it, just a correction to some of the pages and paragraphs? I looked through it and didn't see anything big to the changes on it. Mr. Necker.
Mr. Mayor, that's an issue with the red folder items. When you get these last second like this, I have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
But unless somebody's got that plan in front of them, looking at all those changes, I guess if you have, I'll rely on your judgment.
Well, and I haven't seen them at all.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, you still stand and
sure
adopt the errata sheet. Is there anybody who objects to the errata sheet adoption? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, unfinished business, Madam Manager.
Too substantive.
New business.
But yeah, I agree with you.
Madam Manager.
New business. Yes, I have a couple items that I need your authorization for. The first is to begin land exchange negotiations with the Christ Evangelic Lutheran Church of Juneau in order to gain access to the future Peterson Hill residential development. As you know, we've been working on Peterson Hill for some time, and we need to provide another access route to that property. And the code says that we need to come to the assembly to get direction to be able to begin to start that land negotiation. Right now, our initial discussions with them is to look at doing a land trade, but we need to they're interested. We know they're interested, but before we go any farther, we need to get your direction to authorize us to negotiate a land trade with them. Of course, that would come back to you after that is completed.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Manager. Request for a motion to move this forward. Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to authorize the beginning of a land exchange with the Christ Evangelical Lutheran Church of Juneau in order to gain access to the future Peterson Hill residential development.
Are there any objections?
And I ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. B, item B, Madam Manager.
Yes, and this is to authorize us to waive a $500 application fee and appraisal in order to enter into negotiations for an expanded leased area and extend the Southeast Alaska Food Bank lease. In 2001, the Assembly authorized the manager to lease a quarter of an acre for 25 years at the end of Crazy Horse Drive from $1 per year to the Southeast Alaska Food Bank for the purposes of operating a charitable food distribution warehouse. Over the past 14 years, the food bank has provided a food distribution system for service groups assisting in the needy and homeless throughout Southeast. Now they seek to expand their leased area in order to meet the increased demand. As part of the request, it's asked that the $500 application fee and appraisal be waived because of the service they provide the community. I'm requesting authorization to enter into negotiations for a new lease with the Southeast Alaska Food Bank and waive the application fee and appraisal requirement.
Any discussion from the Assembly? Mr. Keel.
Questions, Mr. Mayor. Do we have any sense of what we're talking about in terms of expanded area?
As it says in the manager's report, a quarter acre.
In 2001?
Well, they're wanting to double the size of their leased area, so they're wanting another quarter acre. Roughly.
Okay.
So they're doubling the size of their building. They're doubling the size of the parking to probably double the size of their operation.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any objections to that request? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Madam Manager, C.
Yes, and the final one is to request authorization to negotiate with the state of Alaska on the parking area adjacent to the Juneau Arts and Culture Center in Centennial Hall. We're at the end of the current lease. It expires on June 30, 2015, and we would like authorization to negotiate a new lease, which would include an appraisal of that property. and probably go into the same lease requirements with an option of 4 1-year renewals.
All right. Any discussion? Mr. Jones.
Maybe it's just my lack of understanding with this cold. Are we leasing land to the state, or are we leasing land from the state?
We're leasing to the state to allow the parking lot basically around Centennial Hall, the Jack, Zach Gordon, and Public Safety, that lot to the state for them to be able to use it for state parking.
Okay. Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. How many spaces is that? Anybody know off the top of their head? It's probably written down somewhere, but I can't tell by looking at the parking lot when I walk through.
It depends on whether they're parking with between the lines or over the lines. I've tried to drive through there several times, and I can't get through there at times.
Mr. Cheney?
I don't have that exact number. It's probably over 200. It's quite a few.
Thank you.
I have one more question, if I might.
Ms. Becker? Just a minute. Ms. Becker?
Okay. He had another question. Is that so? I was going to be polite.
I was already asking you. So.
Oh, thank
you'll
you.
Be fine.
Thank you, Mr. Now I forgot what I was going to ask. So I would hope that when you do this, you are not going to give up more parking spaces in that area. Do you think they're looking for more?
We're not giving anything up. We're just going to rent the ones we have at whatever the current market rate. And I think we're actually going to be leasing a few more that we have been allowing them to park in for free. So we talked to them about that last time we talked to them.
Okay, so it's the same amount.
Same thing.
Okay. Well, it's going to be a higher amount because they're raising.
I know, but the same number of parking places.
Yes.
Not a few more.
I guess my only other question is, this is a standalone operation, but at the same time, there is a study going on, right, on state parking needs down there in the Willoughby. Is there any relationship between this and that study? Is it going to help hinder that study? Does it have any impact on that study? I'm just trying to sort this in my head.
I don't think it'll have any impact to implement this. Any recommendations of the study will take years. This is a short-term lease for 5 years, and it's actually on an annual renewal basis. So if something comes up and this turns out to be unwise, I think we can reel it in pretty easily.
Mr. Keel?
I just along exactly the same lines as Mr. Jones's question, I would encourage staff to begin thinking in terms of how this area can integrate with what we are looking at in terms of a parking facility of some kind.
We are definitely.
And I appreciate the 1 year renewal piece does give us that flexibility, but I want to make sure that that's part of the conversation with our lease partner.
Mr. Jones?
That brought up another question. You're talking about a 5 year lease with 1 year updates within that 5 years or at the end of the 5 years?
Talking about a 5 year with 1 year renewal, so every year we have to renew it.
You can do that five times to get to the 5 years?
5 years, correct. We sign it initially, and then we have 4 1-year renewals. So the first signature is for a year, and then 4 1-year renewals. Okay.
The reason I ask is the Jack and Perseverance are moving ahead with their idea of a performing arts thing connected. And I think we agreed that if they could come up with money, not including any, you know, city money, we sort of held that land available to them for like 5 years. We do that a year ago, 2 years ago. The land in between, but that's part of this lease.
Part of it, yes.
Yeah, and so what I'm asking, if we're going to the state and saying, you know, we're going to lease this and, you know, 1 year, 1 year, you know, and a year and a half from now, the Jack and Perseverance walks in with their money, you know, what do we have an out for that if you're going to lease it with the city? That's my question because, you know, and I think 3 years from now, our sort of commitment to hold that land comes to an end. I think it's 3 years from now. I'm trying to remember the dates, but the manager would know that better.
And I don't think there was a firm date. I mean, I think that.
Well, I think we said something like 5 years, but I'm trying to remember how long ago that was.
Yeah.
And at my advanced age, memory's short. So I would just, I think that needs to be a consideration that if, you know, Perseverance and the Jack walked in 2 years from now with the money, is are we going to be blocked by whatever we do with the state in terms of the lease? So.
When they walk in, they're going to have a parking plan too. So,
I hope so. and maybe it might actually match up with what we're doing with the state, maybe. But you never know.
All right.
And just what we're asking for right now is authorization to negotiate. So we will take that and make sure it's really clear that those renewals are not guarantees, that they actually have to be renewed every year and have that discussion. If the WAC gets money, I think we'll have at least a year's lead time to be able to let the state know that they need to look at some other parking options for those spaces between Centennial Hall and the Juno Arts and
Or may we all work a little harder to implement whatever plan we come up with the money they gave us.
We're working on that, too.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And it'll have to come back to the Planning Commission and to the Assembly before they finalize it anyway, too.
So. Yeah, no end of bureaucracy.
Yeah. Okay, so is there any objections to the manager moving forward on this to negotiate a new lease with the state of Alaska?
No.
Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you.
Right. D, Gastineau School 1% for art proposals.
Yes, the Gastineau Community Schools selection panel has selected four artists for the 1% for art for Gastineau Elementary School. Three of the artists would enter into contract with the city for the completion of their work, and one artist would be paid for an already completed framed artwork. The budget for the 1% for art process for Gastineau Community School is $90,000, and this is the 1% of the final construction cost of the renovation project. In your packet and on the back table, you'll see the four different proposals. In accordance with CBJ 6264, all 1% for art selections are subject to final approval by the Assembly. I recommend approval of the 1% for art proposals for Gastineau Elementary School.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Any questions? Any objections for that moving forward? So ordered. Staff reports. Update from city attorney on Gastineau apartments.
So the last time I brought this issue to you, AHFC was on the verge of doing its due diligence and its inspection of the property. That has been completed. It was done by Jensenor Balot. Jensenor Balot determined that the building is not salvageable and needs to be demolished. The price given to do that work was between $900,000 if the concrete shell of the structure is left in place. The way it was described on the phone to me today was that if we took a giant vacuum and sucked everything up out of the property except for just the exterior shell, that would be $900,000 plus the cost of retrofitting the property versus 1.2 and change to demolish the entire site, leaving the foundation in place so as to avoid problems caused by the retaining walls and the impact on the surrounding properties. Because of the cost to demolish the property, AHFC has determined that the return on investment is too low for AHFC to move forward, either on its own or with a private developer, because the cost per unit that a private developer working with AHFC could recover would not meet the cost, the demolition costs. What this means is that you now have three options if you are to continue to move forward to do something with this property. We could continue down the eminent domain path working with AHFC, but that would require us to demolish the property. We would go through the eminent domain process, take the property, we would demolish the property, and then we would have a flat lot to then allow AHFC to work with a private developer to rebuild affordable housing. We could go the eminent domain route and transfer the property to a private developer to use any way the private developer wishes, as long as and only if the owner consents to a private developer coming in, into that place. There is a provision in the eminent domain statute that allows that type of action. So it would it eliminates the need for the public purpose and allows the property to go from private developer to private developer through the eminent domain process, but there must be owner consent to doing that. The third option would be to initiate a nuisance action or an administrative action under the International Property Management Code to require the current owner to demolish the structure. Going that route would require either an administrative process or a court action. The current owner would be required to demolish the property, and if the current owner did not do so, then the CBJ could come in and do so either at its own or through a private developer, and then recover those costs through a lien process. We would then have a lien on the property, and then we would be able to sell the property. It does not appear that we would be able to recover all of our costs from that property because the current appraised value of the land is $800,000. So if it's going to cost $1.2 million to demolish it, I don't know that we would not be able to get that out of a sale situation. So those are the three options that are available to you at this point if you want to continue moving forward. One of the owners who we had previously not been in touch with has had contact with the law department, and she's indicated that she intends to have the property demolished. I think she gave a date that I don't think is feasible, as there are no permits in place and that work has not been done. I think it was the end of March. The value of the property that she's insisting the property is worth, I also don't have any backup documentation to support her finding or her belief. She believes that the property is worth somewhere around $2 million, and I believe that is what the current owner is asking for in a private sale, which is why the property's not moving.
Mr. Mayor, can I ask a question?
Go ahead, Ms. Green.
What's the fastest way to get something done?
The fastest way would be for us to acquire the property and demolish the property, and then be able to provide a developer with a flat lot to develop.
But we would need at least $1.2 million to do
that. That is correct. The fastest route is the most expensive. The least expensive, which is still expensive, is the slightly slower route.
Mr. Jones.
None of these make me very happy, but I think in addition to the cost of there is a cost to acquire the property, even if we go through eminent domain. We have to come up with some value, right, that goes to the court?
Correct.
And so that whatever that value turns out to be would be on top of then, or we would add to that the cost for demolishing. So the 1.2 is just for the demolition, but we still have some cost to acquire the property.
Except in the eminent domain process, those costs are taken into account. So I don't know how it would pencil out and what we would present to the court, but if it's going to cost us $1.2 million to demolish the property, and if we can't sell it for less than $500,000 because that's the value of the property, then the court will take those things into consideration. And we may be able to argue to the court that because it's going to cost us so much money to get that property into a place where it's marketable, that there's no further expense that we should incur since we're already incurring this demolition cost. I don't know how that would play out, but that's an argument we would need to flesh out.
Mr. Jones.
I guess looking at the options as you presented them, knowing that we're we've been trying to avoid us getting sucked into a hole that we don't need to be in. I guess the one that interests me most is acquiring the property, demolishing it, but still working with Alaska Housing to start to rebuild it, as opposed to us trying to sell to a developer and how we would do that and sort of conditions we might want to put on that and, you know, how soon would the person actually come up with the money to build and on and on and on. A lot of the discussion we're having about the property just up the hill about that. And so it would, I guess, interest me most if we somehow structured this so that we were still working with Alaska Housing so that, you know, once the building was demolished and you had the flat land, you know, we had somebody else up doing all the work to get adequate building put there to increase the housing, as opposed to us then trying to sell to a developer and waiting another 3-4 years for that person to come up with their financing and da-da-da-da-da-da. So I guess option one, if I remember the options and wrote my notes right, might be more amenable to me than the other options at this point.
Ms. White?
Yes, just a quick question. At one point during this discussion, there was mention of private developers that had interest in the property. Has their interest basically evaporated through this process, or do we know anything about that? I mean, is there a way that private industry can take care of this problem rather than the government?
Yes, if the current owner would entertain offers from private sector, okay. And that has not occurred.
Okay.
One comment the AHFC made to us today on the phone was that because any developer working with AHFC is going to be very limited in what they can do with the property, and their concern was that the return of investment might be too low to get anyone interested in the project without the ability to use some of the structure for commercial space. There were also some other issues that AHFC highlighted for us that concern them. For example, parking requirements that might come into play that would be very difficult for a developer to meet if they were to put in housing. Tax abatement issues that they were hoping, incentives that they wanted the CBJ to look at if they were going to try to get a private developer involved. So I didn't mean to suggest that AHFC was like, okay, yeah, give us clean property, we're good to go. There were a few other issues that would have to be worked out. They didn't say absolutely no, we're not going to work with you. It was, we could work with you, it might be very difficult, we don't know if we'd be able to get someone involved, but we're really not going to work with you unless the property is demolished.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you. Could you remind me of what you said, the problems around number three that requiring your owner to demolish the property? Well, I don't remember what you said.
Yeah, if you could review the three options.
Maybe review them all. That's a good idea.
There are, if we went the eminent domain route, there are two possible outcomes to eminent domain. One is we would acquire the property. Well, let me take that back. There are three possible outcomes for eminent domain because I had thought of this. If affordable housing is not the end goal and there is a different public purpose that you could envision using the property for, now that we know that it needs to be demolished, that is something that you can entertain. It could be used for city purposes, it could be used for parking, it could be used for affordable housing. There are more things that encompass public purpose than just affordable housing. So that's one thing. We could take the property via eminent domain for use for affordable housing. In order for AHFC to work with us, we are going to have to work with AHFC to make the property enticing to a private developer. One of the biggest issues is demolishing the current structure and being able to turn over a flat piece of land. There are other issues that AHFC identified that we would need to flesh out before we moved forward. The third eminent domain option would be to ask the current owner if the current owner were amenable to us taking the property by eminent domain and allowing us to sell it to a private developer, which would also require us to demolish the property at our expense prior to selling it, because I think it would be very difficult to entice a private developer to purchase a property that they are immediately going to be underwater in, because they're going to have to spend more than the property's worth to get it into a buildable state. The third option, or the separate option, would be to do a code enforcement action where we, either through an administrative action under the International Property Management Code or through a nuisance action with the court, or a combination of the two, require the current owner to demolish the property within a certain period of time, and if that were not accomplished, to demolish the property at our expense or to work with a private developer to demolish the property at our expense, and then lien the property and foreclose upon the property in order to recoup our costs. That option does not require us to state a public purpose, meaning that anybody who wants to work with us at that point can use the property for commercial development, which has a much higher rate of return.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, go ahead, Ms. Green.
So, I hate to sound like a broken record, but how long would option number three take, the code enforcement action requiring the owner, how long would that option take?
We would ask for the shortest period of time, and the current owner is going to ask for some period of time to get it accomplished. So how long that might drag out, I don't know. We would ask that the process begin. We would ask that certain milestones be reported to the court, in building and demolition permits obtained and contractors chosen and moving forward. And if that were not to happen, then we would ask the court if we could move in. So that a 3 to 6 month period, I think, is an optimistic timeline.
Ms. Mead, though, on Noel Avenue, we did a nuisance order. And where are we at right now with Noel Avenue?
With Noel Avenue, we have recovered $10,000 of the $72,000 spent for the contractor. There is a bank that's foreclosing on the property, which that's now what stalled the process for us. We can't take any other action while the bank is foreclosing on the property.
So 3 years later, the house is still there?
There is no bank that's foreclosed. There is no lien on this property.
I see, Ms. Troll, you had your hand up.
Yeah, this is a question to understand how we ended up here. One of the times that we talked about the public purpose of the property, we did speak about affordable housing, but we also talked about mixed use and that there could be commercial in there. And we really want it to be as flexible as possible so that we can meet the guidelines of HFFC, but be attractive to a developer. And so now all of a sudden we're hearing back, oh, they're just looking at it through a lens of affordable housing, and they're not looking at it through a lens of the mixed use and the commercial opportunity.
In our discussions today, they did consider that, but they cannot offer to a private developer full commercial use of the property. And because the property is going to be so expensive to return to a buildable state, their concern is that the rate of return is too low, because they can't offer to a private developer a ratio between affordable housing and private and commercial development that makes it an attractive project.
So that's their internal rules that prevent a larger ratio being devoted toward commercial property?
They provided us with spreadsheets that outlined what they believed was the most they could offer to a private developer as far as commercial space goes. And it did not pencil out for them.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Mead, I guess I would be interested in having some sense of what those numbers are. I mean, presumably AHFC envisioned a redevelopment cost that didn't envision getting this thing and putting people into it. And some comparison of that redevelopment cost and what they thought might produce an attractive return versus look, it's a flat lot or nothing, I think might give us some perspective. I don't, without seeing some numbers in front of me, I don't know whether potentially there's the opportunity for partnership with the AHFC in redevelopment,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, a situation that might, I don't know what the numbers look like. Could we put in half the demo cost and have it still be attractive to them to redevelop? It would help me to have some sense.
AHSC did offer to have someone come down and speak to you. If you think that would be helpful, I can ask them to do that.
I would appreciate some sense of what those numbers look like.
Well, before I move anywhere further, I need numbers on these three or four alternates. You know, I need to see we're going to pay $1 million for the property. We're going to pay $1.2 million to demolish it. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. What is the total number for option 1, 2, and 3 and half of a 4 or whatever we had there?
Along with a timeline. I mean, that's the other trade-off. You know, and some of these options have a real long timeline to them.
And maybe we just write a letter to the 3 or 4 people we know that were privately interested in it and tell them to go back to the owners and make another proposal. Or ask them, not tell them. I mean, if we're not interested now and we tell them so, maybe they'll be interested in a private developer doing it now. It's got to be getting harder and harder to pay for.
We've encouraged the people that we know have been pursuing it. We have been encouraging of them contacting the owners and trying to get some agreement, and that has not gone anywhere.
Ms. Beck?
I'm still confused about requiring the current owner. In requiring the current owner, we can't just walk up to them and say, listen, you tear it down, you fix it. It goes to court. The judge rules?
There are two, and this impacts the timeline. And the reason why I can't give a firm answer right now, and I'm equivocating a little bit, is because if we can go through an administrative process, there are two issues that I need to flesh out. One is we don't have a final report from Jensen Yorba yet. Once we get that final report, if that report is something that our building official can rely upon to make a finding that the building is in such a deteriorated state that demolition is really the only option, we have available to us an administrative process under the International Property Management Code that is a much shorter, cleaner process. It is the process that we used with a burnt-out trailer on Long Run Drive. It was a very short process. The one hang up that I need to research is this. There was a Supreme Court case in 2008 that held that a municipality cannot impose a lien for the collection of a fee unless there is statutory authority to do so. So, for example, this case that came up, I don't remember the community, but they were imposing liens for garbage service, failure to pay their garbage bills. And the court said there is nothing in state statute that allows the municipality to impose a lien on real property for the failure to pay for garbage service or utilities. There is a statutory authority to impose a lien on real property for failure to pay property tax. You can impose a lien for sales tax. Those are statutorily created and enforceable. But municipalities, you cannot come up with your own lien process. The International Property Management Code provides for a lien process and allows the imposition of a lien for failure to do whatever it is you're ordered to do by the building official, so in this case, demolish a structure. I do not know what the court's position would be with respect to us taking the position that we are going to impose a lien on this property for failure to abide by the building official's order to demolish the property. That's why I said there might be a dual process. We might proceed administratively, but then have to go to court to get the authority to impose that lien. I just need to figure out if there's any other community or jurisdiction that has relied upon the International Property Management Code in that way.
Any other questions, Mr. Jones?
Mr. Mayor, I agree with, it would be nice to have some timelines and some numbers, but having sat through lease negotiations with Docks and Harbors and this appraiser versus that appraiser and this assumption versus that assumption, you know, we've had two different engineer reports. Now we have an architect's report. Each one seems to get a little worse in terms of the status of the property. I don't want to argue that we need a fourth opinion. It might get worse than that. But it just seems to me that, you know, every time somebody looks at this property, it gets worse. And so it's not going to get any better sitting there. If the owner is going to want his $2 million, I don't know any developer in this town that's going to pay him $2 million to destroy that property, unless they just won the lottery and have no need to make a profit. I haven't heard about anybody in Alaska winning lottery lately. It seems to me that the shortest period of time that, you know, we can get this information so we can act, because I just honestly think we've got to get that building down and get some idea of how to move forward. If you look, you know, we spent tonight talking about the economic plan. We spent talking about the comprehensive plan. I mean, that's valuable property that's just sitting there hurting both us and the citizens and not providing housing. And we need to do something as quick as we can. And the sooner we get some information we can rely on, because it seems like every time we get information, the next time we ask for an update, it changes and it gets worse. So I guess I would rather err on spending money quick rather than have it just pile up and the next report we get the cost double. So I don't know where that leads us, but I agree that we need...
talking about us spending money.
Mr. Mayor, yes. Because I think we are the only people at this point in time that have the ability to get that building down and in a state in which maybe somebody in this town is willing to take it on as an investment, even though we as the city and the citizens might lose out. But I don't see anybody else on the horizon in this town that's going to do it besides us.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Troll?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking through the likelihood of the other three options. Thinking on Mr. Jones's comments, I mean, if we did get some numbers and timelines, we realize that the eminent domain route, we've been discussing it, and it's within our control. It's something we can act on and do, and we've been talking about doing it in a way that's in partnership with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I don't see that changing. I don't see us trying to change the desire to get into the business of building affordable housing there. Rather, we're trying to make it attractive to a private developer. The other option of eminent domain, where we get the consent of the private party, this is not a cooperative person we've been dealing with. It's been recalcitrant, difficult to even locate at times. And not unless Ms. Mead has a different opinion, I just see that that's an unlikely scenario, that we're going to get his private permission to proceed with eminent domain in that regard. So then that brings us down to the nuance, the code enforcement, and, you know, requiring him to demolish it, and he's gonna, if he thinks it's worth $2 million, he's not about to do that. You know, I don't like option one, but I just don't see us getting anywhere further without pursuing the eminent domain proceedings at this time, because the other two are just unlikely to lead to anything in the end. The only thing we can be sure of is what we have in our control.
Eminent domain gets you the property faster and allows you to do something with the property faster. How that fleshes out, we'd have to go through the court process. But the taking of the property happens very, very quickly. The third option is the one that gets you back the most money on what you have to spend, but is going to take a much longer period of time.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Were we to do that quickly, presumably we would need to identify the public purpose for which we were taking it by eminent domain at the outset.
That is correct.
I'm not sure if suddenly we have, instead of a building that can be rehabbed, we have a building that must be demolished. I don't know that this assembly is prepared to declare which of several potential public purposes, for which of those purposes we would use it. There have been discussions of a number of possibilities. I think you threw a few out tonight. I'm not prepared to make that decision tonight without some serious look at the options and what they are.
Mr. Mayor, this is Karen.
Yes, Ms. Green.
My concern, too, about eminent domain and the public purposes is that we had, if we want a vibrant, I know we need affordable housing, but I'm not sure that spot is the best place for affordable housing and what we want to see happen downtown with a vibrant downtown. When we were talking about some affordable housing and mixed use in there, that I thought was a great idea. But I don't want to be back into the position of having to do just affordable housing either. I don't think that's in the best long-term interest of downtown.
Thank you, Ms. Gray. So,
is that the case, Mr. Mayor? Excuse me, may I ask Ms. Mead that question? Is that the case that if we did go down the eminent domain route that we would be confined to defining public purpose as just affordable housing?
It could still be mixed use. The difference in the ratio between the commercial and the affordable housing hinges upon whether AHFC is involved. If AHFC is involved, more of the property could be used for commercial space. If it's our eminent domain action and AHFC declines to get involved, more of it would need to be used for affordable housing. So what I'm hearing is two things. One is you would like to hear from AHFC to clarify whether or not they're willing to go forward and could find the property worthwhile going forward if we were to demolish it. If we were to hand it over a clean slate, would they then want to work with us? And you want more information about the potential purposes that we could use the property for if we were to move forward with an eminent domain process, as well as the costs and the timelines for the various options. That's what I'm hearing so far you would like more information on?
Yes.
Yes, please.
That's what I was going to get to. Jesse, you still wanted that stuff, right?
Yes, please. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, is there anything else that we want up front here? Besides somebody telling us
it's going to be okay.
It's not going to be
Mr. Mayor, okay. I'd just like it if the landowner would take care of his own problems and not become the city's problem, but maybe that's asking too much.
Yep. Yeah. Mr. Jones?
I guess I understand some of the other questions that it was seen to me that maybe we can learn from HFC if they have other concerns like property tax abatement or those kinds of issues that would make it more feasible for their developers. There's no reason why we can't do that in terms of searching for our own developer if we have the property and we have it demolished. I mean, if those kinds of issues are out there, but we have more options for mixed use, more options for other things. If you know, we found our own developer. If we've addressed those issues, then and they need us to change things in our code or make exemptions to our code, then we can do that. Trying to entice our own kind of developer and maybe not have to involve Alaska Housing. So, I think we need to study all that and understand and then decide what, you know, if those are incentives that they can offer, but they're asking it from us, then we should be able to offer that to a private developer here in town at the same time. So,
and I think that probably private developers will be going through the same thing if they're getting bank loans as the 2nd and Franklin Street people did. The requirements of certain amount of this and certain amount of that doesn't fly for a bank loan very well. So the less requirements we have on the property, I would imagine, the better for the private side of the house to do to move forward. I don't know how we balance our needs and their needs exactly, but sometimes we might not be able to. So, Ms. Troll.
So perhaps Ms. Mee can continue having some further discussions with those private parties that, you know, have shown some interest in the property and, you know, report back to us as to their level of interest in which route we proceed, the timeliness, you know, what the, getting to the points that Mr. Jones raised, you know, what are the tipping point differences between the mixed use that begins to make the property more attractive to private developers. I would like to have a sense of that when this comes back to us.
And are we using the, if you look at the economic development plan, it gives you the price of property downtown equals $18 a square foot and other places in the borough, $9 a square foot. Or what, are we using those higher numbers too as we go through this evaluation on this particular property? Because it's right there on the edge of that valuable dollar property. Does anybody remember that stuff in the economic?
Yeah, I remember because it showed.
Well, it's basically the amount of property tax that the city receives per square footage. But if I understand right, because of the fire, this was considered a hardship property, and we either waived or significantly reduced the property tax. I assume that hasn't changed. I mean, you know, if we're even collecting any property tax, it's on a very, very reduced level because of the fact this is a distressed building. So the only way that's ever going to come back is if it gets developed, period.
So isn't that an avenue that we can look at? Maybe we shouldn't be waiving that and putting it down to a hardship position. If it was a full taxable unit or building lot, wouldn't the owner be more susceptible to selling it faster, probably?
To the best of my knowledge, there was no hardship on that property, and the assessment was quite high until this current year, relative to its true worth.
Just property.
Right.
Okay, so if we can get that number too,
sure,
and give it to us at our next, yeah, that would be interesting to see.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
I thought that when that happened, there was a discussion with CDD, and part of their, how they were helping the owner was to look at historic restoration grants, those kinds of things, and then mentioned the hardship waiver on the property tax. So I assumed that that had been done. So I'd like to know if it was or wasn't.
Yeah.
And is he current with his property tax?
Mm-hmm. Ms. White.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just kind of wondering, and I guess I'm still new to this, and I'm trying to figure out, because when you guys talk real estate, this is completely different from anything I've ever known. It's almost like you guys are speaking a completely different language. But this guy is costing us a huge amount of money. Once all the dust settles, do we have any way of going back on him for the difference and trying to get some sort of reimbursement for what it costs?
So if we were to do a code enforcement action, place a lien on the property for the costs that we incur in making the property developable again, we would foreclose on that lien, force a sale of the property. That gets us back the first chunk. If there is a remaining amount that we are still owed, we could reduce the lien to a judgment. A judgment then gets recorded, that becomes a lien against any real property owned by the same person.
Within the state of Alaska only, though, right?
No, it's in any state.
It is, okay.
With this group, though, this property is owned by a defunct LLC. I do not know.
Sound familiar.
Yeah. So whether there is, it is not impossible to go after the true owners of an LLC who might own other LLCs and have other property elsewhere. It is a process, though. So I'm not going to say that's an insurmountable problem, and I don't know enough about this situation to know if we could pierce the necessary veils in order to eventually recover all of our costs, but that is something that we would definitely look at.
Okay.
It is possible if the right facts are in place.
Okay, anything else? I think we've got a bunch of information coming here, and we'll get that at our next meeting. Okay, let's move forward on to the mayor's report. Nothing. Committee reports. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll go quickly. You know that at the last committee of the whole, we heard presentations about the Aquatic Board from both Kirk Duncan and Max Merst. We discussed the ordinance that we approved tonight on accessory apartments. We heard the Aquatic Plan. We had a presentation about the Aquatic Plan, and it's still up for discussion with Assembly. So that was it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's been a little while since our last Lands Committee meeting, and so a number of things have been handled. Let's see. Couple of things to let the members know about. The question of a map amendment for a Hidden Valley subdivision was not taken up as scheduled in our last lands agenda. It will be on our next lands agenda. I expect it will take most of the committee's time at that meeting. Ms. Becker wielded the gavel when the committee discussed the North Franklin lot proposal and forwarded that to the committee of the whole for consideration. I did not participate in that part of the meeting. But for the assembly this evening, the Lands Committee did recommend that the City and Borough of Juneau support a change in state law to allow for a tax abatement on subdivision improvements where we currently have a tax deferral process. That would require a change in state law, and it was the recommendation of the Lands Committee that the Assembly forward a letter of support to our legislative delegation, and so I would so move.
Is there any objections to that? Is there a copy of the letter somewhere?
No, it's a conceptual motion.
And Mr. Keel's going to write it?
I would be happy to, Mr. Mayor.
I think I've got examples of one from the past that we've already done. I'll check with staff.
That was it for the Lands Committee. The Marijuana Policy Committee had its first meeting just about 2 weeks ago. I'm sorry to say I was elected chair, and Mr. Satry of the Planning Commission was elected the vice chair. One important thing that the committee did was ask staff to establish a single email address where members of the public can provide comments, send documents for our consideration, et cetera. That email address is marijuana.committee@juneau.org. There's also a website, or rather a page on the city's website, where we'll be posting documents as well as the committee's agendas and minutes and the like. Speaking of which, the packet's out for this Thursday's meeting, and members had it on their desks if you have the pleasure of serving on that group.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. Crane?
Well, I will see if I can be coherent here. My first meeting today started at 3 a.m. your time, so I'm running out of steam. The last Finance Committee meeting, we once again took up the recommendations from the Tax Exempt Committee, and we voted to move three items forward to the Assembly for discussion, public comment. And those three items were raising the limit on items purchased to $12,000 a year, or excuse me, $12,000 an item, and that $12,000 every 2 years would be raised by Consumer Price Index. We also moved to forward the recommendation that only Juno seniors would receive the sales tax exemption, no out-of-borough seniors. And number three, we voted to move forward the issue of no senior tax exemption for restaurant services. We are still considering the issue of the 250% level for seniors receiving all sales tax exemptions because we had additional questions for the finance on exactly how this would work. And so we gave direction to them to bring additional information back to the next finance committee.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. Anything else?
That's it.
Ms. Troll, do you have anything on committees?
I do under liaison report, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we'll do that in a minute when we come back through. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Public Works and Facilities Committee met February 9th. I'll keep this short. One of the biggies on our agenda was the 2016 to 2021 Capital Improvement Program. The list should be out to all of you. If not already, it should be out there pretty soon. We also had a representative from DOT come and speak to us, and I wrote down his list of items as well as I could keep up of projects in this city that they're working on, and the list goes to 22. Some of the biggies, Brotherhood Bridge, as everybody's aware, on the separate bike path and bridge to Engineers Cutoff is looking at an October completion. Malaga Harbor Road and Bridge, the road still needs paving. Everybody's seen the bridge that's out there. Thane Road Avalanche Control, gates. They're going to be putting up gates this summer on those avalanche zones. And a guardrail extension that is slope-related also on Thane Road. They're going to work, I think, on this one, which is great, Mendenhall Valley Adaptive Traffic Control System and Intersection Intelligence Upgrades is what they're going to call it. So hopefully that figures out when cars are there and when they're not and changes the lights appropriately. Fritz Cove Widening in July. A Glacier Highway to Fritz Cove scheduled for next summer. Lena Point to Tea Harbor Widening next year. And like I said, I've got up to 22 items on here. Many things that I hope come to fruition, and I do not know how many of these things on this list of 22 are under the axe for the budget cut stuff. I don't know. Didn't get into that with them. We were just glad to have a DOT person here, and lots of good projects. All of them sounded actually pretty good to me. That's all I have for that, except for the next meeting is scheduled for March 2nd at noon here in the chambers. Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met in a work session with the social service providers to hear their comments on the functioning of the Social Services Advisory Board. That meeting was the 19th. I participated by phone, but Ms. Crane chaired it. We got some good information, and we'll be moving forward looking at continuing our look at that. The Social Service or the Human Resources Committee met tonight, and we looked at the Juneau Commission on Sustainability appointments, and we recommend that John Smith be appointed to the Commission on Sustainability to a vacant seat, term expires 6/30/2016, and that Gregory Smith be appointed to a seat that expires on 6/30/2017.
Are there any objections to those two appointments? Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We also heard the annual report from the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee, and we considered appointments to the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee. And the HRC recommends that Francis Dowd be appointed to the vacant seat. Term expires 2/28/2016. And that Tom Rutecki, Lindsay Hollick, and Eric Oderkirk be appointed to seats, terms expiring 2/28/2018.
Are there any objections to those four appointments? Seeing none and hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. We also considered appointments to the Jensen Olson Arboretum Advisory Board and heard their annual report. And the committee recommends the appointment of Edward Byarski, Steve Mosley, and Patricia Harris to the three vacant seats, terms expiring 1/31/2018.
Is there any objections to those three appointments? Seeing and hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. We also considered the resolution that was on our consent agenda on their sister cities, expanding the board from 5 to 7 members. In addition, we, the last committee of the whole, the Aquatics Empowered Board issue was sent to the HRC. I've had considerable discussions with lots of people about that and put a proposal together, talked with the city manager, and basically what the committee has asked is that the city manager convene a group, internal working group that also includes member of the Aquatics Advisory Board, somebody from the Glacier Swim Club. We recommended Max Mertz because he's been the spokesperson. We had a list of issues and questions, and we asked the manager to put a together report in writing and the report back to the HRC at our next meeting, which is March 16th. Once those questions, those answers are before us, we felt that the committee then would have a better idea of how to proceed forward on that. And so I presented that. The committee accepted that, and so we look forward to getting the written report back on the 16th, and we're hoping that when we can move quickly after we sort of get this list of questions. And they had issues about the ordinance, the transition process, capital improvements, maintenance, staff, those kinds of issues and the questions that raised. And so basically we have asked the manager to report back to us at the March 16th HRC.
Okay, and they understand that you want it on the 16th?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I had that conversation with the manager before the meeting, and we're clear on that.
Okay, thank you.
And I believe that is the end of the HRC report.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jones, you can go with liaison reports if you want.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Downtown Business Association have had two meetings since we last met. One, there was no quorum. We had a lot of discussion related to their meetings, getting back on a routine schedule, trying to come up with a quorum and not be in conflict with the DIG since we were meeting at the same time as the Downtown Improvement Group. The next meeting I missed because of my illness. So I think their next meeting is the third Thursday in March, and I'll try to be there. Juneau Economic Development Council met, and the economic plan was discussed. Some other issues were discussed. I won't be there when they meet on March 4th. I'll be traveling, but I understand from them that you will be at that meeting to talk somewhat about the economic plan and what you envision is their role. And so I'll be interested to read minutes, and hopefully Ms. Troll will be there. The Planning Commission meets tomorrow night. At their last meeting, they did approve and move forward to the assembly, the Ock Bay plan. And they also, if I remember correctly, it's the Housing First conditional use permit they approved with an adjustment to parking and things like that, so that that was moved forward so they can continue in their planning and have that before them as they write their application to Alaska Housing. And that's my liaison reports.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We heard from Eagle Crest last week, and their next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, March 5th at 5:30 in room 224 here. I might have some update on some of the things they talked about last week. And the Docks and Harbors next board meeting is this Thursday, 5:30, February 26th, here in the chambers. Thank you.
That's been moved to 224.
But I just got an update that it's been moved to room 224.
The marijuana committee's taken over the chamber.
And that's all, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Nankervis, the harbor, Aurora Harbor, looks really good with the main floats all the way into the other section.
Yeah, they're making a lot of progress on the harbor. It looks really good.
Forward, good. And out at Stetter Harbor, too. And they're doing the fill out there for the parking lot area. And so it's nice to see those two bigger projects moving forward for sure. Okay, Ms. Troll, liaisons. Did you have anything else? I'm sorry.
No, not under liaison. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Affordable Housing Commission met on February 3rd, and their topics were supporting the Housing First project. They also discussed the upcoming home and outdoor show and their role and the information that they wanted to be able to have there. The housing plan is now under contract, and the contractor is making the rounds with all the commission members to get their input. And if any assembly members wants to speak to the person, I'm sure I can help you get in touch. And lastly, the Affordable Housing Commission, some members intend to, you know, seek out working with True North on the mobile home loan assistance program. So they're moving ahead on that level. The Juneau Commission on Sustainability met on February 10th. And the main topics that they came up with, they discussed the role of the assembly member. And the Planning Commission member being voting members and making up a quorum, and they opted to change that. And so they'll be coming to the Human Resources Commission with a recommendation to be treated similar to all the other bodies. And they are continuing to move on an energy plan that has gone out to bid, and they're reviewing some of the scope of services. I also attended 4 days of meeting of the Tongass Advisory Committee, and I'm no longer an alternate. I'm a voting member now. And we had that sort of come to Jesus moment in the meeting, and the committee took a caucus and came back, and I can't give more details, but we are still all sitting at the table constructively working on a recommendation. And I think we will get there in the end with all the interest groups signing off on it. But that will happen at the next meeting, which will be here in Juneau starting March 25th. Those are my liaison reports.
Thank you, Ms. Troll. And so, when is Forrest Cole going to be retiring?
Well, Forrest, I don't know the exact date. I think I'm looking at about June 1st, thereabouts. They are in the process now of interviewing internal people for his replacement, and I think the date that we should be announcing of his replacement within a month. He's still up to his patient is healthy.
Last assembly meeting, but we'll meet again on the 2nd. The school board met on February the 10th, and a couple of highlights that might be of interest to the assembly. They did adopt a strategic plan for 2015 to 2020. I thought it was a good plan and a lot briefer than anything we've ever done in our planning documents. They also reported on two things that were very interesting. One is that the Montessori Borealis expansion. As they continue to refine their expectations for those numbers and get expressions of interest from parents, the school district currently expects that will probably bring in about $180,000 more than it will cost, primarily from the state funding formula. And so, unfortunately, that's all rolled into the budget numbers that are so dire, but it's one very small bright spot. They also reported on I don't know the right term, but the number of credits. A couple years ago, the school district raised the number of credits required to graduate. And coming into this school year, there were 358 12th graders. 151 of them were not on track to have enough credits when the school year started. At the end of the first semester, starting into the second, however, that number was down to 81. So the district, primarily teachers with some data from administration, have worked really hard with those students to get them, more and more of them, toward the credit counts they need. So I thought I would flag that for assembly members' information. Finally, Mr. Mayor, from the school board, at its last meeting, it made some recommendations for a little bit of money left from a couple of capital projects that has to be used on voter-approved school projects. Can't go into new projects, and it can't go into operations. Primarily, the school board recommended, and this in consultation with city staff, applying that money toward accelerating the debt payments, retiring the bonds a little bit faster. One change they did recommend, and I don't believe it's come before Public Works and Facilities at this point, is to spend a portion of the money from Gastineau School on a memorial is not the word, but an installation that recognizes the Tlingit elders buried on that site and the ancestors whose grave sites were disturbed during the renovations and restoration. And so that proposal was put together in conjunction with the Douglas Indian Association and I think is an excellent and a very respectful recognition of the land that school sits on. So that's it for my liaison reports. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And you think – and that was CIP dollars?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Those are CIP dollars, and they dealt with – basically a small pot of leftover CIP dollars, some from Gastineau, some from – my memory is failing me – some from another project that had come in just a little bit below together, just a little below what was available.
And whoever – from somebody told them that was eligible to use that piece?
So that piece is part of the Gastineau School project. The Gastineau School project being voter approved, the district believes that it will get approval from education early development at the state level for that. And then the rest of the money, the bulk of it, to go toward accelerating the debt repayment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. White?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As you know, last Thursday, the assembly met and had a joint meeting with the airport board. That was on Thursday, February 19th. I had some follow-up from a few of the board members who really appreciated the attendance of the people who could be there. Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau has had a few meetings since we last met. I know I'm going to butcher this last name. Nancy... Nancy W. at the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau has put in her resignation. Elizabeth Arnett, who has been working as the group tour sales manager, will be temporarily filling that role until they can do a nationwide search for someone with experience in destination marketing. So Nancy is going to be a huge loss. In fact, after she had announced her resignation, she did a presentation to our Rotary Club. And had I not known, I would have never guessed. I just the level of enthusiasm and energy that she brought to her, you know, and passion that she brought to her presentation, I would have never guessed that was her decision. So she's going to be very missed. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you, Ms. White. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Chamber Board met on February 4th, and I wasn't able to go because I'm handicapped, you know. So as far as I know, they're discussing our budget, and they're going to have all the answers for us soon, I think. The DIG meeting, Downtown Improvement Group, have discussed parking and had staff there to discuss parking downtown parking, and they looked at the film for the last time and have now archived it, I believe. The Alaska Committee had a meeting on February 11th. We talked about the 150th state celebration that's going to take place in 2017, and I reported on this before. Juno's project is a Seward statue that will be put on the plaza, the courthouse plaza. They also discussed the Southeast Conference mid-session summit, the visitor satisfaction survey, statewide polling, and each of us were given our legislative contacts to have for the rest of the legislative session. Southeast Conference is planning the mid-session conference March 17th and 18th. Each day will start at 7 in the morning with a continental breakfast. Topics are basically everything: a marine industry, tourism, energy, timber, mining, fisheries, transportation. And the board of directors of that organization is having a meeting on February 24th. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Becker? Just real quick, the Sister Cities group made it to Whitehorse and did all the celebrations, and I've got a whole list of things that they did up there and contacts that they made, and I would imagine we'll get them in at one of our next meetings and have them give us an update. But I know that they very much enjoyed and had a very good time, and it was appreciative of the Whitehorse mayor and assembly members that we were there and we sent somebody and showed that interest. So I think it'll give us positive returns. We've already, some of the things that are happening is there may be a group of them come down for the 4th of July besides the RCMPs that we asked. There may be a group of them, in fact, there is a group of them coming for Southeast Conference, and there will be a follow-up group that will come to Prince Rupert in the fall when we do Southeast Conference. The big Southeast Conference is in Prince Rupert. Just go around, and we'll try to mend the bridges or mend the docks that the state of Alaska has torn apart. So, anyway, joke, everybody. So anyway, that was a very worthwhile thing to send those two gals up there, and they did a good job for us. And like I say, we'll get a report from them here in the next month. Okay. Assembly comments and questions. Just raise your hand if you got something. Otherwise, we'll just go right on in to Ms. Kroll.
Yeah. I want to say thanks to the Assembly for approving the NOAA Task Force report. And I would hope that, or ask the Madam Manager, that you look through how to begin to implement. There's six key strategies. Maybe come to a finance committee meeting with a report on, you know, what if we need to designate certain staff persons, or if it's best handled by a short interim contract or whatever. I just would like to have a report on how you see us moving forward to implement some of these recommendations, and we can bring that to a finance committee meeting.
And some of those things are coming forward in the economic development plan too.
Right. They do overlap, but some are specific. Mm-hmm. And I want to applaud Mr. Mayor for being Johnny on the spot there with Senator Murkowski and passing this off. I saw that. It was great. And speaking of the economic development plan, I really want to applaud the effort that went into it. I think this is a really wonderful community plan. There's a lot of analysis, but most importantly for me, there's a lot of strategic thinking with concerted community input. I really do feel that this is the community's economic development plan, not just ours, and that we all have a responsibility to take it off the shelf and make sure it gets implemented. I had the opportunity to participate in the Black History Awareness activities and was at the gospel singing workshop and sang my heart out. Yeah, it was a wonderful experience of people coming together in this community to not only share the story of our, you know, America's Black history, but to celebrate the progress that we've made. And it was a very joyful event. And you may not have known that I could actually carry a tune, but you know, there you have it.
Ms. Troll, can we get you to sing the Alaskan flag?
Yes, again. Yes, again. No, it has to be this big rhythmic beat, you know. And I will be traveling out of country for the next 3 weeks, but I will be calling in via Skype for the various meetings.
Okay. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not sure I can make quite as joyful a noise as Ms. Troll, but I'll do what I can. A note that there's a one of the initiatives that the voters passed goes into effect tomorrow. The minimum wage rises in its first step across the state. There may be another initiative, the first step of which goes into effect tomorrow, but I hope everyone will just be calm about that. But in the joyful noise category, I just have to extend my compliments and my thanks. Today, the Central Council of Tlingit Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska announced that they had adopted a new set of rules governing, I believe, tribal adoptions, child custody, divorces, and marriage. And it includes equal marriage for all. And that's a very big deal for the tribe in our community. And so all I can do is extend my compliments and thanks to them for their approach. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Keel, do you want to give us an update on the Filipino Hall?
Oh, you bet.
You were dancing.
Mr. Mayor.
I guess I'm going to have you dance while
This Saturday night, the Filipino Community Inc. At its downtown hall hosted both a reception for the legislature and the inauguration of its officers for the new year. And there was a great combination of the solemnities of the inauguration and the festivities of a reception and cultural entertainment and enjoyment, a little education for those of us who didn't grow up in the Filipino community. It included serenading by some Filipino singers, tinikling, the dancing with the poles, I guess, and also Richie Adan, bamboo poles, thank you. Richie Adan's Dance Machine International presented a number that was headlined by Renee Abella, by Aaron Abella, who is a remarkable singer. That was not particularly Filipino in its origins, but from Broadway.
Sounds like a good time. Ms. Crane, before you go to sleep, do you have some comments and questions?
No, I don't think anything this evening. I'll give a report on NACO when I get back.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. Ms. Becker?
Thank you. I just wanted to thank Ms. Crane and the leadership of AML for organizing the presentation that we heard on marijuana. In spite of the fact that it's overwhelming and there's a lot of work ahead of us, it was definitely good information, and I know those of us who were able to go, especially those of us who are on the committee, mm-hmm. appreciate having that information. One activity that I've been doing that I don't think I've ever mentioned to you, but I think it's kind of interesting. Judge Levy organizes an event that's called Success Inside and Out. And maybe I have mentioned it before, but anyway, I'm working on that committee. And it's an activity that takes place on March 7th this year. And certain inmates who are close to time for release are invited to come basically for about a five-hour kind of fun and workshop and education. I'm on the education and employment panel with people who know a lot more than I do about employment, believe me. So we have some great speakers, and it'll just be a really good event, and hopefully this helps those inmates that are within a few months of being released to feel more comfortable getting back into Juneau. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Any other assembly comments, questions? Presiding officer, I skipped. Who do we have, Mr. Nankervis?
Oh, it's all good, Mr. Mayor. It's all good. There's nothing new to record or report. The record has been supplemented and finalized, and the parties are now working on their briefs.
Okay, is there going to be a meeting?
Not for a while yet. April.
Oh, yeah. April 13th. Okay.
Yeah, that date hasn't changed. It's still middle of April.
And what's the story on the Bicknell meeting? Is that tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. It's the 25th. Is that tomorrow?
Day after.
Tomorrow.
The other 25th.
It'll be tomorrow.
Okay. Okay, anything else? I'll open it back up for public comment. Is there anybody who wishes to speak to us from the public on anything on non-agenda items? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. And Ms. Becker, a motion to move into executive session.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move we recess into executive session to discuss a matter the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the city and borough of Juneau. The topic to be discussed is the Bicknell appeal.
Is there any objections from the assembly? Any objections from the public of us going into executive session on this issue?
We have a couple minutes before we do that.
Thank you. We will take a 5-minute break and then open back up in executive session.
This ends the public participation of the CBJ meeting. We're going to rejoin normal programming in a minute. And this is KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. Thank you for listening and have a good evening.
For the safety of the city. Well, the first vendor actually lost the contract because one of the city officials had been bribed to the tune of several million dollars. And another consultant actually.